Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nonprofit U, a forum where nonprofit stakeholders can share lessons learned and discuss the latest developments in the industry. My name is Valerie Leonard, your host. I'm a consultant to nonprofits, and I specialize in community and organizational development. I work with nonprofit organizations to help them make a stronger impact to their clients and communities, and you can find Nonprofit U on Facebook and on Twitter. I encourage you to comment early and often using the hashtags NonprofitU, The Law Project, or Nonprofit Compliance. You can also leave comments on blogtalkradio.com/nonprofit_U. The chat room is open, and you can post comments and questions. In order to use the chat room, you must open a listener-only account. You'll find a link to open the account on the episode page, and you can also email me questions at consulting@valeriefleonard.com or send messages through Facebook and Twitter. You'll find a Nonprofit U fan page on Facebook, and the Twitter account is @NonprofitU. We'll be taking questions by phone and from our chat room at about the 20-minute mark, and the call-in number is 347-884-8121, and if you're listening in front of a computer, you will find that guest call-in number at the top of the page. Today's episode is 'Tis the Season for Compliance. We will discuss various topics of nonprofit compliance, including the board's role in maintaining compliance with state and federal regulations, differences between political activities and lobbying, activities in which tax-exempt organizations and churches can and cannot engage, and an overview of the Law Project's Compliance Institute. Again, we encourage you to call in with questions and participate in a live chat at about the 20-minute mark. The call-in number is 347-884-8121. Nonprofit professionals, educators, and community stakeholders are especially encouraged to call in and share your stories, and you'll find links to the handout and other resources in the comments section on this episode page. Our guest for today is Jody Adler. Jody is the director of the Law Project, a project of the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. TLP provides pro bono legal advice and education to nonprofit entities and to low-income entrepreneurs to further the project's mission of supporting economic development in Chicago. Jody has been with TLP, formerly known as the Community Economic Development Law Project, for over 18 years. She specializes in the law of exempt organizations, working with community-based nonprofit organizations. Jody supervises a staff of 3 attorneys and 1 paralegal. Jody was also instrumental in developing TLP's seminar series offered to nonprofit organizations, as well as the development of publications addressing topics of concern to nonprofit groups. She's a frequent speaker on issues of nonprofit board service and exempt organization concerns. She regularly interfaces with private foundations, consultants, law firm pro bono coordinators, and technical assistance providers to develop services for nonprofit entities and entrepreneurs and transactional pro bono opportunities for attorneys. Jody was awarded a Wasserstein Fellowship at Harvard University for the 2011-2012 academic year. She currently serves on the Board of Directors of Legal Counsel for Health Justice and the Chicago Community Loan Fund. Jody is a graduate of the DePaul University College of Law and the University of Iowa. So thanks for being on Nonprofit U today, Jody. It's indeed an honor to have you. Can you tell us a little bit about the Law Project and how you came to work for them?
Sure, and thank you, Valerie. It's a pleasure to be here. So the Law Project has been around for 30 years, As Valerie said, we are part of the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, but we are the Transactional Assistance Project. So unlike many of the other civil rights projects with the Lawyers Committee, the Law Project only works with community-based nonprofit organizations, low-income entrepreneurs, and provides transactional legal assistance for free to those organizations and those businesses. Our goal is to facilitate the growth and sustainability of Chicago area nonprofits that are focused on community economic development and social service, and advancing the economic mobility of our small business clients. Our motto is that we focus on the mission, so we focus that you should focus on your mission and leave the legal work to the law, Law Project.
That's smart.
How I came to the Law Project, I was actually a community organizer before I went to law school, working in the Edgewater and Uptown communities of Chicago. Went to law school to be a better community organizer, but ended up practicing law. Yeah. And so I was practicing law with the U.S. Small Business Administration in Chicago and really wanted to get back to doing community work. Mm-hmm. And there was a job posting for a job here and applied, got a job as a part-time attorney, and have since moved from a part-time attorney to a full-time attorney to the director of the program.
Oh, my goodness. See, you find out something new every day. I never knew that about you.
Yeah.
So that would explain your passion and understanding for this work.
Right. Right.
Okay. So here we're going to be talking about nonprofit compliance. And first of all, we need to have a better understanding of what nonprofit compliance is, and most importantly, why is it so important?
Sure. So I think that a lot of people hear about nonprofits and hear about charities and think that it's just a some kind of legal designation that doesn't carry much weight or doesn't mean very much. But other than, you know, if you become a nonprofit, then you can get donations to your organization, mm-hmm. and that if it has income coming in, you don't have to pay taxes on it. As mm-hmm. people learn more about nonprofit organizations, they learn that they're this whole beast of things that apply to nonprofit corporations. And I mean that in the nicest way.
Yes.
Nonprofit corporations, unlike for-profit corporations, have a lot more oversight. There is a lot more concern about, you know, how the entity operates and how it spends its money and where that money comes from. And, you know, you have to report to the Attorney General's office, and you have to report to the Secretary of State, and you have to report to the Internal Revenue Service. And so when we talk about compliance issues, we're really talking about that. If you are a nonprofit tax-exempt organization, there are a myriad of rules and regulations that you have to comply with to make sure you stay in good standing with at least three, if not more, government agencies. And depending mm-hmm. on where your funding comes from, there could even be additional requirements for compliance.
Right.
So it's as minor as making sure. I'm sorry. It's as minor as making sure that annual reports are filed, mm-hmm. and as complicated as making sure the activities you're carrying on are in compliance with the rules and requirements.
Mm-hmm. And that's where people get in trouble a lot. So it's not just remembering to file reports annually, but it's also staying within the limitations of what nonprofits can and cannot do.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So I guess I want to step back for just a little bit, and if you could just remind the listening audience of what the responsibilities are for board members, generally speaking, and then if you can share with us their role with maintaining compliance with regulators and funders.
Sure. So unlike for-profit corporations, there are no owners in not-for-profit corporations. There's no individual who owns or controls what happens in a not-for-profit corporation.
You would never know it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Some look like they are, but they're not. There's no shareholders who are voting up or down decision making or removing somebody from office. In a not-for-profit corporation, it really is that board of directors that ultimately is responsible for all compliance issues that happen. Mm-hmm. The law actually says that it's the board of directors that manages and controls the organization. You know, we say the buck stops with the board of directors. If something goes wrong with an organization, it's usually because the board hasn't been doing what the board is supposed to be doing. And what I mean by what the board is supposed to be doing is, it is the board's responsibility to ensure that the systems are in place for staff, mm-hmm. that the staff complies with all the laws that apply to that type of organization and that type of exemption. So a board member doesn't necessarily have to know every single detail of everything that's going on every single day for in the organization. And in most not-for-profit organizations, the boards don't, in fact, have that kind of involvement on a day-to-day basis. But they have the responsibility of the oversight of the organization. And that's coupled with the legal fiduciary responsibilities that the board members each have to the organization, which really in a nutshell means that they're always putting the interest of the organization above their own, mm-hmm. that they're making the decisions for the organization in the best interests of that organization that any reasonable person would make. Mm-hmm. And that they have a general understanding of what the legal issues are that confront the organization, comply with mm-hmm. those, and if they don't have the independent knowledge to do that, at least
sounds like we have technical difficulty. Jody has dropped off. Jody, if you can give us a call at 347-884-8121 so we can reconnect, that would be awesome. Okay, so while we're waiting for Jody to come on, you know, basically what she's getting at is the fact that ultimately the board is responsible for all decisions. You know, we tend to look at the CEO, the executive director, or management, and we think that they're responsible, but ultimately it is your board of directors who is responsible for everything that goes on in the organization. They're responsible for making decisions in a way that there is no conflict of interest. They are responsible for making sure that every decision that comes before the board is done very carefully, you know, what we call the duty of care. And we do have Jody back on. Jody, I am so sorry that we lost you.
It's okay. I'm not sure what happened, but I'm back.
Okay. Yes. And you were basically talking about the responsibilities of the board, especially as it relates to compliance and, you know, just making sure that everything is in order.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I don't know when I got cut off. But what I was saying is that the board of directors in a not-for-profit really has the ultimate responsibility for making sure that the organization is in compliance with whatever funding requirements there are, rules, laws that apply to the organization. They don't engage on a day-to-day basis with those things, but it's their mm-hmm. responsibility to make sure that the policies and the procedures or the checks and balances are in place for staff do not mm-hmm. violate, you know, any of the laws that affect the organization. They also have fiduciary duties to the organization, which mm-hmm. simply are called the duty of care, duty of loyalty, and the duty of obedience. What those yeah. really mean in a nutshell is that if you are a director on a board, you always have to put the interests of the organization above your own interests and those of your mm-hmm. family members. which means if there's a contract that's being looked at and you have a sibling that does the kind of work that the organization may need and you want that person to get that contract, you have to disclose the relationship that you have with that person. You can't mm-hmm. take advantage of the fact that you know that information so you can get somebody in your family a contract that they might not otherwise be able to get without your power. Mm-hmm. It also means that you need to read all of the information about the organization. You need to be familiar with the organization. You need to go to board meetings prepared to talk about what is on the agenda and the information that you've received ahead of time. And it means that you need to have an idea of what the laws and requirements are that apply to the organization. And you need mm-hmm. to most importantly know when it's time to hire a professional.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's really where you guys can come in, too. You do board trainings and help people better understand their roles, right?
That's correct, yes. So we do a lot.
Okay.
We have a lot of publications and things of that nature, and we do board trainings and send out legal alerts and newsletters with information in it to make sure that our clients are in compliance.
Okay, awesome. So I just want to remind people that they're listening to Nonprofit You, and our guest today is Jody Atler. She's the director of the Law Project. We'll take questions from our callers in chat room at about the 20-minute mark. Our call-in number is 347-884-8121. So, Jody, we're in the political season now, and a number of nonprofits and churches, you know, they want to get a better understanding of how they can do their civic duties of engaging the public, but at the same time, they don't want to cross the line and jeopardize their tax-exempt status. So the first question is, can you explain the difference between political activities and legislative activities, or what we would call lobbying? And then the second question is, when is it or is it not appropriate for tax-exempt organizations and churches to engage?
Sure. I'll be happy to do that. And I think the easiest one of the political activities and legislative activities to describe is the political activities, and I think it's the most timely right now, so I'll start with that
mm-hmm.
and actually finish with that. Political
okay.
activities really are opposing or supporting a candidate for public office.
Mm-hmm.
And the law is very, very clear that tax-exempt organizations, 501c3 organizations, may not engage in that type of activity. And I think
okay.
we'll talk in more detail about kind of descriptions of what that activity looks like and what you can or cannot do. But that's the bottom line. The general rule is if it's a nonprofit 501c3 organization, it cannot engage in campaign activity that either supports or opposes or even appears to support or oppose a candidate for office.
Mm-hmm.
Legislative activities are a bit more complicated. Lobbying work is, there's a very specific definition, which basically says it's contacting a legislator, his staff, or an employee of a legislative office for the purpose of supporting or opposing a piece of legislation that could
mm-hmm.
be an act or a bill or a public referendum. There
mm-hmm.
is something called grassroots lobbying, and there is something called direct lobbying. And what the IRS says is that organizations cannot be engaged in substantial amounts of lobbying activity. It becomes confusing because it's unclear what substantial means. There is no clear definition of that. So organizations
mm-hmm.
that are interested in engaging in lobbying activities may want to consider something called a Section H election. And a Section
mm-hmm.
H election is literally a check the box on an IRS form that you submit to the IRS. And once you do that, the IRS gives you a bright line test. It says if you are going to be engaged in lobbying activities, you can spend these many, this percentage of your dollars can be spent on lobbying activities. So there is
mm-hmm.
a bright line test that says if this is your budget, you can spend this much money on lobbying. If you don't do the Section H election, you are stuck with this kind of sketchy, nobody really knows what percentage is substantial and what percentage isn't substantial for lobbying activities.
Okay.
So one of the main differences really is for lobbying, you can do some of it, and you've got two different tests. For political activity, you really can't do any of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so interesting, too. If you were to spend time trying to influence the governor, which is very difficult in the state of Illinois, but if you were to spend time trying to influence his decision-making, would that be considered lobbying?
If it had to do with legislative activities, yes. So if there's
okay.
some kind of bill or something of that sort, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but if it were something that just related to his executive branch, would that still be considered lobbying?
No,
unless
it
you wanted
right.
to introduce a new program or something like that.
So that's a great question. It has to do with the legislative branch, not the administrative branch.
Okay. All righty. So what are some of the activities in which tax-exempt organizations might engage to involve themselves in public policy, but they're not, you know, doing lobbying at the State House,
right.
so to speak?
Right. So the distinction really has to do, if as you think about it, is education and advocacy
mm-hmm.
versus lobbying.
Okay.
So organizations can be engaged in educational activities around publishing reports, publishing studies, doing studies, conducting educational meetings to inform people about things
mm-hmm.
is very different than what lobbying would be.
I gotcha. Okay. And then if... say, for example, elected officials wanted to work with you to educate the public, or if you wanted to have, say, a forum,
mm-hmm.
can nonprofit organizations do forums, you know, around election time to let folks know, you know, who's running for office and all that good stuff?
Sure, and so that jumps us back to the political activity side as opposed
mm-hmm.
to the legislative side. And on the political activity side, the IRS has been actually very, very generous with respect to providing information about what organizations can, in fact, do that doesn't get them in trouble with respect to political activity. And you're absolutely correct. Organizations can have candidate forums.
Mm-hmm.
They can do voter registration guides. They can register voters. There are a number of things that organizations can do that, as long as they do them in a nonpartisan fashion, it is not considered campaign activity. You can even have candidates for office come and speak to your organization. As long as it's not campaign activity, and as long as there's nothing that's taking place at those events that indicates the organization is supporting one candidate over another.
I gotcha.
I think there's the IRS has a couple of publications that run through a number of different fact situations that illustrate what
mm-hmm.
can and cannot be done by organizations. So you can invite candidates to come and speak at your organization, and as long as they all get the same amount of time to speak, as long as there is no campaigning activity going on at that event, then it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you invite candidates to speak and the candidate that you support gets twice as much time as all the other candidates, or all the other candidates don't get any questions and just the candidate that you support gets the questions, then that is political activity, because there's an appearance that you're supporting one person over the other person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I had a question that was asked on Facebook, and I think that's pretty common in Chicago. You know, what if you're a member of a board of directors for a nonprofit, or even if you're a pastor of a well-known church, congregation,
mm-hmm.
can you, I guess, circulate petitions on behalf of a candidate and not get in trouble, you know, not get your organization in trouble?
You can do it on a personal level. Mm-hmm. So the IRS distinguishes between the individual and the organization, and the rules that we've been talking about really just apply to the organization and not the individuals involved with the organization. If you're a pastor at a church and you're very well known and the church is very well known and you're supporting a candidate, can you send around a petition in support of that candidate? Yes. Should you do it at the church? Should it have the church's name on it? No. You want to distinguish the activity that you're doing personally from anybody thinking that it's something that the church is saying is okay and the church is doing, if that makes sense.
Yes, that's very, very clear, and I thank you for that. Question for you, you know, before we open it up for questions, I just want to remind folks that they're listening to Nonprofit U, and our guest is Jody Atler, the director of the Law Project. If you have any questions, please give us a call. The number is 347-884-8121. Again, that number is 347-884-8121. And while we're waiting for folks to call, Jody, I want you to tell us about the Law Project Nonprofit Compliance Institute. You know, that's coming up in March. So
great.
I saw, yeah, it looks pretty detailed, pretty interesting, and it looks like a number of folks could benefit. So can you share with us some information? And then also, before you start, I just wanted to ask your permission if we could go a little bit longer. It's 2:26 now, and I know it'll probably take you more than 4 minutes to give your project justice. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay,
that's not
great.
A problem.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm happy to talk about the Nonprofit Compliance Institute. This is something that we just started last year. You know, we work with a lot of organizations, and because we've been around for a long time, we see that there's turnover in a lot of organizations, and people know that, you know, long-time executive directors, you know, move on, the board changes on a regular basis, and we really felt it was necessary to put something together for people that have been involved with organizations for a while and or are new to organizations that have been in existence to really kind of just spend a little bit of time learning what all that means. So it really ties into mm-hmm. what we were just talking about. What does it mean to work at a nonprofit organization? What are the compliance issues? I'm on the board of the organization, but I don't really know much about nonprofits. So how can I learn just in general about what my responsibilities are? So we put together mm-hmm. this Nonprofit Compliance Institute, which is a series of 5 webinars that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Each one is 90 minutes. One covers board roles and responsibilities. One covers prohibitions and restrictions on charities. There is one that talks about income creation and 501c3 issues. You know, every organization is always struggling with, you know, either receiving, you know, government money or foundation money. And more organizations are looking at how to come up with new ways to support, financially support their programs. And so this looks at different ways of bringing in income to the organization and how you do that without jeopardizing the 501c3 status. We have a mm-hmm. general nonprofit compliance program, which talks about annual reporting requirements and record keeping, donor thank you letters, and then we have a final session that's on employment basics, so general employment law that applies to nonprofit organizations. So mm-hmm. there's these five workshops that run from March 8th until March 22nd. You can register for all 5 of them, and it's $150, or you can register for mm-hmm. each one individually for $35. If people are interested, the information is on our website, which is thelawproject.org. If you go to events or news, you'll find the registration information.
Okay, awesome. And then, too, I did include a link to the very page that you just referenced.
Great.
You know, in the comments section. So you got 2
Oh, fantastic.
To
right.
Okay. Are there any more? Did you want to share any more information about the Institute?
I think that's it. I mean, there will be opportunities for people who are participating to ask questions. We also may be doing some of them where you can come into our office and sit and participate in person. It will depend on some speakers are going to be able to do that, some speakers are not. But yeah, I mean, we've done it once before in the fall, and people really enjoyed it. And I think it's nice to be able to get that kind of 90-minute bit of information and go on with your day, and then, you know, a couple of days later, learn some more, and you know, be able to ask questions throughout the session. And also, we're always available to provide follow up if you have questions that cross your mind after the event, after the webinars. We are here to be responsive to those types of questions.
Yeah. Now, are the webinars recorded and people can access them afterwards, or this is just a one-time deal?
Well, the webinars are supposed to be recorded. It's just a matter of whether the technology works or not.
Right, I understand.
And so, yeah. So we intended to record the first series that we did, and some recorded and some didn't. We're hopeful that the next time around that we'll have in March, we'll have better luck with the recording process. And if we are able to record them, we will make them available, but it will be on a closed site. So people would have to contact us and probably pay a certain a fee to be able to then watch those. And the reason we do that is because it costs, we have to pay to do the webinars. So we have to try to cover our costs for that.
Right. And I think that's an excellent value, you know, whether there's a recording or not. You know, just think how much it would cost you to have a top-notch attorney to spend 1 hour of their time, you know, just on any one of these topics. You know, compare that to, is it 5 weeks for $150?
Five programs, right.
Right. You can't beat that. And, you know, I know from experience, you know, you guys that are not shabby attorneys. You really know your stuff, and you've got relationships with, you know, some of the top attorneys in the city.
Right, exactly. So all of the workshops aren't done. You don't have to listen to me for all of the workshops. We have a network of attorneys at most of the large law firms in the city who volunteer to do legal work with us, and they also volunteer to speak at these for us.
And then another question, the one on employment, is that typically the rules, you know, I guess that you would have in a handbook, or does it also include information on payroll taxes?
It includes information on payroll taxes. It includes information on hiring people and what questions you can ask and what questions you can't ask, what kind of documentation you have to have. And then it will also include information on the difference between independent contractors and employees, because that's such a hot issue right now of making sure whether somebody really is an employee or an independent contractor.
And, you know, I'm teaching a class at USC, and we're doing human resources. That's one of the modules in operations, and that's what we're discussing right about now. You know, this week. So this conversation is timely. So we have come to the end of our show, and I'd like to thank Jody Atler, the director of the Law Project, for being our guest today. Jody, would you care to share any parting thoughts and tell us how we can reach you again?
Sure. I think that, again, it's really important for organizations to understand that there are a lot of different rules and requirements that apply to their operations. And that if they have questions or concerns, they should always feel free to call the Law Project. Our number is 312-939-3638. Or you can email us at tlp@thelawproject.org. I also want to just point out one thing that we didn't talk about or mention is that we have an employer hotline, which is a project that we have with the law firm of Seyfarth and Shaw, and once every month and sometimes twice a month, there are employment attorneys available for free 30-minute consultations on employment law issues. And this is for employers. It's not for the employees. Usually you see these things for employees who have complaints or concerns, but this is really geared towards the employer to make sure that the decisions that you're making are not going to get you into any trouble, and they're available and ready, willing, and able to, you know, provide guidance for 30 minutes for free, and then if they need to provide you additional time, they either direct you back to us or they'll schedule another call with you. So that's also up on our website if people are interested.
Oh, that is great. And then, you know, I just want to remind people, too, you know, when you're looking for an attorney, you know, make sure you get one who is well-versed in nonprofit. You know, not all attorneys are created equally, so I strongly recommend going through the Law Project. You know, they will not steer you wrong.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening to Nonprofit News Blog Radio Talk Show. The show will be available for download within about an hour. Be sure to tune in next week when our guest will be Reverend Albert Tyson III. He's the presiding elder of the 4th Episcopal District of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and we'll be discussing the role of the church in community development. So I'm looking forward to having another lively discussion. Thanks again, and thank you again, Jody.
Thank you, Valerie.
Okay. Bye now.